Welcome everyone to the Goldster Podcast, where we take you behind the scenes with guests of all shades and styles and their fascinating and enriching stories about their lives, their victories, their failures, their ambitions, and of course, their books. I'm Humphrey Hawksley, your host for the duration, and today we're exploring an inevitability that impacts us all, getting older, and how to stay active and as healthy as can be. Please enjoy. And to find out more, check us out on www.goldster.co.uk. And without further ado, we begin.
This one. We'll start off with the fun one first. As a man of a certain young age, you grew up in the 60s. And what is your... Don't tell us the answer to this yet, but what is your favourite song then that tugged your heartstrings and you remember today? And for everybody out there, including our audience here, put us in the chat or write it on a note and tell us, what is the song that tugged your heartstrings? The band that you remember today, that piece of music that when you hear it now, resonates with you and has a meaning. We're going to run through that as we go, and you're going to reveal that at the end yes. of the show, isn't it? The second, you've been described as a figure reframing the conversation about getting old. What exactly does that mean?
Well, society is very concerned about the fact that the number of people over 80 will double in the next 10 years. And the images of a tidal wave of need coming towards health and social care. But that's really due to confusion. There's a lot of confused people. I'm not speaking about people with dementia. I'm speaking about the public and members of the medical profession. Because the science now shows us that aging by itself is not a cause of major problems until the late 90s.
Late 90s.
The normal biological process of aging. I mean, look at Her Majesty. Look at David Attenborough. Now, you need a bit of luck. You need a bit of luck to choose the right parents. Not necessarily wealthy parents, but parents who value education. And you need a bit of luck to avoid the diseases we can't prevent, mm-hmm. Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. But there are three other things going on as we live longer. Loss of fitness, mm-hmm. and the world we live in is dominated by the car, the computer, the sofa, the TV, and everywhere you look, there's little bags of calories. Genetically, that's not what we're involved to do. So loss of fitness starts as the first of the three processes.
Okay. Now, the books that we're talking about here, that's SOD 70 for the younger, older people, and SOD 60 for the infants, I guess, of the older people. There's a sort of air of the rebel about that, isn't it? You're saying SOD to what many people think is inevitability.
Yeah, the fourth time someone said to me, how does it feel to be 60? I thought, oh, fuck 60. Yeah, I just got to get on with it. So I started writing a book. And ran out a bit of time, so I wrote a book when I was 70 called Fuck 70. Took it to the publisher. Oh, we don't like that. I said, but it'd be great if it was banned. You know, the newspapers would pick it up. It'd be terrific. Yeah. Oh, we don't mind the F word, but we are English graduates. We prefer alliteration. So the word sod 70, the term sod 70. It's just to a sod it, you know, it's a bit like income tax and things. You've got to adapt.
So if I could take you to that alliteration thing.
Yes.
What happens, when do you start getting old? Do you start getting old at 50 or...?
It's probably, aging's got two things. Yeah. One is the maximum ability is reduced, say the maximum pulse rate.
Yeah.
And the second is loss of resilience, your ability to cope with change in temperature or a trip or being isolated.
So Lionel Messi has just retired age 35. So why don't we go back to then, what in his aging or life process...
I think it's about the 30s things start. So even if he carried on training, I mean, you have to look at Federer. You see, people like Federer, he gave up not so much because of aging, but because of an industrial accident.
Right. Yes, yeah. Yes.
And I think it's, if you look at top sports people, and I've studied this, by their late 30s, but it may be also they're just getting fed up. I mean, imagine... if you're Roger Federer coming to the O2 Arena for the 17th time in November to the O2 Arena for the O2 thing.
You mean wanting to move on?
Well, you see, that's the second factor, there are social factors. So there's loss of fitness, but that's complicated by social factors. And the social factors might affect some people, like deprivation, which is still a major cause of loss of healthy life, but also ageism, negative thinking. Mm-hmm. And then the third factor is disease. Now, we get more diseases as we live longer, but not because of the aging process, because of the environment we live in. The car, the computer, the desk job, the TV. And I had to get a taxi a bit of the way here, although I cycled most of the way. And I always ask the taxi driver, what are you doing to keep fit? And I've seen a huge change in the last 40 years. I haven't met one taxi driver who's not aware of the dangers of his job. And the danger of his job is not a car crash. It's sitting 8 hours a day.
Could I separate those two off for a second? The negative thinking you talked about, the positivity of that, explain how that sort of draws you back, stops you doing things.
Well, just a belief that the longer you live, the more years you have, your brain isn't working so well, you've got declining ability, and what you need is just rest. We'll do something for you. Now, it's partly guilt. It's partly guilt. And I don't like the word care. The word care means doing things for you. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to change this in care homes, for example. And I think I've got one. I said, why don't you call your people enablers rather than carers? Because they should enable, not care. But you see this happening because disease is complicated by accelerated loss of fitness, partly due to the disease. And I had a heart attack 10 years ago, so I lost a bit of heart muscle. So I've now got aging plus disease. But what happens after disease is that other people start taking over. Well, I don't like to see mums struggling to the shops or get a car to deliver. And that's said by a young person who pays money to a gym to struggle. It's called training.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
But just because mum is, he doesn't see mum very often and he feels he should see her more often. I mean, there's a whole variety of these things come in with the best of intentions.
So what is if you feel yourself becoming negative about, I've only got 20 years to live or 10 years to live or something. What's the point of getting out of bed in the morning? What do you do?
Well, I think if I could speak to you as though you're the sort of person who says that, I'd say, listen, sunshine. That's the great Glasgow phrase.
Sunshine, yeah.
Listen, sunshine. You may think if you sit back and do nothing, you'll pop off with a nice little heart attack, but you're more likely to finish up stuck in that chair, unable to get the toilet in time, and a bloody nuisance to your nearest and dearest. What we do know from biological study and from research and things that we can do to change what's happening, that at any age, no matter how many conditions you've got, we can help you recover the ability you've lost, reduce your risk of future problems, and adapt to any disease that may have occurred.
Right. So this is anticipating, isn't it? It's situational awareness about your future. And putting in those security blocks to try to make sure the worst doesn't happen.
Yeah, so we've all been brought up to a world in which it appeared there were three stages in life: childhood, work, and retirement.
Yes.
I'm also banning the word retirement, by the way. We're calling
good.
It the Renaissance.
Oh, my God. You call it Renaissance. Yes. I loathe that word, retirement.
Yeah, yeah. And we see, at the age of 60, the average person's got a 30-year life expectancy. Yes. 30 years. So what the hell they think is going on? And they say the medical profession is no better, no clearer than the public about the aging, loss of fitness, disease, and negative thinking, these four factors.
So just on that retirement thing, because the BBC that I used to work for used to retire mandatory at 60.
Yes.
People who had been there from cradle to not quite great cradle to retirement, a lot of them just died afterwards because they missed the institution, they missed it, and they set up a sort of charity BBC group to go around and visit people to make sure they were okay. Mm. So this sort of retirement concept is not a good one, is it?
No. But you see, they're okay. I'm actually a strong, what's emerging now from research, and this is partly research into reducing the risk of dementia, and dementia is the disease we fear most. There are three things. Firstly, keep your brain healthy.
Yeah.
Sleep well, minimize stress, physical activity. Mm-hmm. Don't take too many drugs, including the medical profession drugs.
I want to get onto that.
Secondly, keep your blood vessels healthy.
Right.
It's the same as heart disease. Vascular dementia is about 40% of dementia is preventable. And then the third factor, which is very interesting, and this is hard science is showing this, is a sense of purpose, sense of mission. The Japanese call it ikigai.
Right.
Ikigai. And this sense of doing something, not for yourself, but for others. And again, Her Majesty, she was working for others to the end.
Yes. We had on Inside Story, we had Dr. Linda Shaw, who's a neuroscientist.
Yes.
And she said, being generous.
Yes.
Acts of generosity can actually liven the body and the brain.
Yeah. Yeah. But you see, people like me who qualified before 1960, we were taught that about the age of 20, all that happened in the brain was the brain cells died off. Mm. A man called Professor Cahal got the Nobel Prize in 1906. Mm-hmm. We were still being taught that in 1966. But in the last 10 years, because of the work of people like her, we now know that the brain is, they call it plastic neuroplasticity,
mm-hmm.
that the new skills, new connections can form. We don't think new nerve cells can form. They right. can in mice, but not in humans. But that doesn't matter. It's the connections that form, providing you're being challenged.
Yes. Yes, and I think that's what Dr. Shaw said, because there was this idea that the brain continues to expand.
Yes.
And to learn. We have got some responses back
yes.
on your favorite song, although
yes.
I don't think anybody's got it right yet, but we have got Yesterday by the Beatles is from Sue. Harry Nilsson, Without You by Judy. I love that song. Dream, Dream, Dream by Everly Brothers is Gene Joyce. And Suri says, a rare book by Luigi Camaro, How to Live for 100 Years, advises to have a life of sobriety, eating a small quantity of food, etc. Do you know that book, Luigi
yes,
Camaro?
Yes.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what I've been doing for Goldster is, and it's great, the book club you've done, I've got about 40 books about aging.
Right.
And I know you've covered How to Age Joyfully.
Yes. Oh,
there's my other book,
which I want to talk about in a bit of detail. Yep.
And the same messages are coming across now with slightly different language. And about diet, the Mediterranean diet, don't eat too much, be careful of alcohol, stop smoking if you still smoke. But I would say the interesting thing that's emerging is the psychological issues about engagement mm-hmm. and why isolation is such a major problem, how deafness is a risk factor for dementia. Mm. So I think it's starting to look now at ways in which, and what we're doing with promoting exercise is not only that saying to, I mean, Riverstone, I'm going to be saying to them, well, it'd be very good if we did exercise, be even better if that exercise had a purpose, raising money for that wonderful right. nature reserve
mm-hmm.
South of the river. Mm. And I'd quite like the two Riverstone units to compete. I was with a big housing group, and there were some people there from Amersham and some from Aylesbury. Mm. And I said, well, the one thing that you people in Amersham would like to do is to make more money for the Wildlife Trust than those bastards in Aylesbury. And they said, yeah, those bastards in Aylesbury. Well, the guys in Aylesbury, they thought we'd like to make more money than those bastards. So I think it says mission, purpose, but purpose for other people.
Yes.
Because you see, if you're raising money for the Wildlife Trust, it's for the environment and it employs young people.
Yes. And also, it's a conversation. It's a talking point.
Yeah.
When you meet people, what do? You don't say, I'm retired. Mm. You say, I'm raising money for the wetlands across in Putney or
yes.
something
yeah.
like that. I'd like to take us back to SOD 60.
Yes.
And I want you to talk through the points that's different from turning 60 to turning 70. So give us your key talking points from turning 60.
Well, the message there is explaining to people what's happening to you, the four factors, but also that things can be done. And then this interesting paradox, because I said earlier that aging is characterized by loss of maximum ability, maximum pulse rate, for mm-hmm. example, and loss of resilience. And that means, funnily enough, that every year you've got to do a little more activity.
Right. So you have to up the exercise.
You have to
size.
So, for example,
exercise.
I'm on 32 minutes brisk walking a day. The usual guidance is 30 minutes, but I've gone to 32. And I think actually next year, I'm by 79. I'll make sure that I'll do 33 minutes brisk walking.
Now, 33 minutes a day.
Yeah. So just but this slight change And it's pretty much the same message in 70 and in 80. Mm. The difficulty for each of those groups is that the image of 70 and 80 is increasingly, what's the point? I'm 70, or what's the point? I'm 80. Thank goodness for President Biden, eh? I mean,
he's 80. And yeah. Also, you have to do more. As you say, you have
every
to
year,
do more.
Every year, and every diagnosis, you've got to think a little bit more. So I've got three or four long-term conditions. I had a heart attack. I grew up in Glasgow before the Clean Air Act, so right. My lungs are a bit damaged. I suffer from something in Glasgow called CLEB. Have you heard of that disease?
I have not.
Coughing like a bastard. My GP,
I've heard of the Glasgow Kiss.
My GP had never heard of it.
CLEB, I don't think I've heard of
that. No matter how many conditions you've got, if you get another condition, now I'm not saying it's not just brisk walking. We usually talk about the daily dozen. That's 12 minutes. There's five S's in fitness: strength, stamina, skill, suppleness. So what's the fifth S, Humphrey? Psychological. Pathetic, but it goes down well.
That's your phonetic alphabet again, isn't it?
So brisk walking is very good for stamina and for strength of the legs, but you need a daily dozen for suppleness, skill, and strength. But again, each year you should be starting to do a little bit more. Probably suppleness is probably the most important of those.
That's suppleness is sort of yoga and Pilates,
yes,
is it? That's. I'd like to ask our audience and all our streaming audience that put in the chat, tell us, how much do you do a day? Well, you're talking about 30 minutes walking,
30
at
minutes
79.
Brisk walking,
so
and,
how much do
and 12 just, minutes of 12 minutes of the daily dozen for strength, suppleness, and skill.
Right.
Now, skill is also, there are different ways of doing that. My wife's get used to the fact now that when we go out and I'm speaking somewhere, the woman who's introducing me says that she thinks about me every night when she's getting ready for bed. And my wife looked at her and she said, oh, yes, your book says stand on one leg while you're brushing your teeth for 2 minutes.
Oh, yes. Yes.
The electric toothbrush is wonderful. Gives you that 2 minutes. But that would be two of the 12.
Yeah.
That's very good. Very good skill training is standing on one leg.
Yes. Yes.
I think the daily dozen is fine for 60 and 70. But at 80, it should become the daily 14.
Okay. You just up it.
Jumping that number between 12 and 14, you see.
And that includes...
And 90, probably 15 minutes a day.
15. And that includes going to the gym and doing weights and treadmill and all that.
That's not realistic for most people. But I often say to people, and I don't know if there's any people in the audience or online, if you've got someone in their late 80s, sugar's very good for you, providing you keep it in the bag. So why don't you have 2 kilograms of a kilogram of sugar each side?
And walk with it.
No, every time the advertisements come on, stand up 10 times.
Yeah.
So it's starting to think of ways in which you can do things. And this is what we're looking at now is how we can use digital so that people can do who are housebound. Obviously, the number one thing is to get people out. But people who are stuck at home, they could join a daily Pilates class, a yoga class.
Yeah,
other sorts of things.
And that's what I want to get onto when we're going to talk about Goldster in a minute. Suri has come up and said speed is another S. Would you?
Speed, yes, but the speed is a consequence of strength, stamina, and skill.
So that's it. So the psychological remains, does it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. The body, we don't measure speed in the body. That's a consequence of better fitness. But it's a good S. I'll use that S.
Suri adds to her the book about Luigi Camaro, says that he was a Venetian nobleman who lived 500 years ago.
Mm.
So this is what you're telling us is not new.
Pretty simple. It's very, very simple.
But the technology is new, isn't it? The way that you described the phones and the televisions and all that sort of thing, we're in a different environment, but the human body has stayed the same.
Well, you see, this is the issue, really, that we're genetically unsuited for this. And one of my ambitions, which I've failed in, is to get Bear Grylls not to have people running about the countryside. That's very healthy. They're at low risk. I'd like Bear Grylls to commute from Wapping to northeast London and sit at a computer for 8 hours a day, and then commute back for an hour. Yeah. That's high risk. That's just the last two generations.
Yes, and the time to do it and the energy to do the necessary exercise. Yeah.
So it's now, these are genetic, where he called, the professor in Harvard calls them mismatched diseases. Type 2 diabetes is a mismatch between our genes and the environment.
I'd like to, we've got a few comments coming in here. Keep the comments coming in, everybody. We want to know what you think Sir Muir Grey's favorite song is from the 60s, and tell us what yours is. And what exercise you do that's different to the 33 minutes a day or whatever it is for whatever age group you do. Put it in and we're going to feed it into the conversation. I want to talk about Golster's mission in a moment, but I want to also talk about increase your brain ability and reduce your risk of dementia. This is something that everybody is talking about now. And we used to call it senility, didn't we?
Yes.
But now it's becoming a major thing because we're living longer. What are you telling us in this book that we don't know already?
Well, again, I say I meet a lot of confused people, members of the medical profession. And I think people are even puzzled about the relationship between Alzheimer's and dementia. Those terms are used as synonyms by many people.
Yes.
But Alzheimer's is a disease, probably a group of diseases. I think they'd be better called Alzheimer's diseases. Mm-hmm. It's one group of diseases, but it looks as though it's responsible for about 60% of dementia.
Okay.
And the other 40% is due to damage to the brain itself by problems with sleep and stress. Like inactivity has a direct effect. Has a direct effect on the brain. Secondly, by the curse of the 20th century, arterial disease, which we usually think of as heart attack or stroke. But strokes are just big clots going to the brain. And vascular dementia is lots of tiny little clots breaking off vascular dementia.
Can I just clarify? So dementia is damage to the brain. Alzheimer's is that plus something else.
So dementia is the consequence of damage to the brain, one cause of which, the single biggest cause, is Alzheimer's.
Okay.
So you've got something called vascular dementia.
Right.
Which is disease of the arteries, and usually there's lots of tiny clots in the brain.
Okay.
If you look at an MRI, it's like a snowstorm in the brain. Mm-hmm. And then, as I say, keep the brain tissue healthy, keep the arteries healthy for heart and head. And then the third interesting factor is social changes, isolation, lack of engagement, lack of purpose. In some way, those are tied up with dementia.
And but just to explain, Alzheimer's is what exactly?
Alzheimer's is, a set of diseases that you can see in sections of the brain that affects the brain. Okay. That a chemical called amyloid appears, things called plaques, little white things in the brain tissue.
Right.
So it's a disease like chronic bronchitis or rheumatoid arthritis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it looks as though it's about 60% of dementia is Alzheimer's, and that leaves another 40%. And the main factor in that others are vascular.
Okay.
Yeah. Just as, this is the century of heart disease in the last century. So vascular, but increasingly we're now seeing there are these social factors as well.
And what is brain ability? What do you mean by that?
Well, this is being positive that part of the problem when you are living longer, or when you're working with people who are dealing with people who are living longer, is everything's expressed in negative terms. We all talk about disability as opposed to ability, physical, I mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, why don't we invent a word called brain ability? So we invented a word called brain ability.
Is it in the dictionary yet? Webster's and Oxford?
Not yet. It'll, on the case.
Because I can remember it quite easily. Yeah. And give us some...
But the evidence is you can improve your brain ability.
Well, that's what I want. How do we do that?
Well, there's a range of different things. Mm. The main thing is to be active.
Yeah.
Now, that might be to start off with a new Colin Dexter in Oxford. So crosswords, for example, Sudoku. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then get a bit more challenging, learn Chinese or learn another language. But really what's emerging now is it's to do with challenge. So becoming a volunteer.
You're right.
going to help reading in schools, for example.
That's that generosity we were talking about earlier as well.
Yeah, well, it's not so much generosity. I always say to people, even if you do other people no good, it'll do you good.
Yeah.
And then the balancing thing, I don't know if you've got experience, Humphrey, but being on a voluntary committee, tenser than public service committees, because people care so much.
Yeah.
So get on the committee. I said this to someone last night. Get on the committee of the Bridge Club. Oh, God, he said. I said, well, it's very good for you. You know, the arguments that take place there.
Yeah.
But it's hard to think there of engagement and purpose.
Yeah.
That's what's emerged. And we can now, clever neuroscientists can show new networks forming in the brain at any age.
So let's just go through that again. And I was going to say, do you do Wordle?
No, I don't.
Anybody do Wordle? Look at that. How many? At least 50-60% of the hands went up. They're incredible.
That's good, yes.
You do it every day. It takes, 5 minutes? And it drives you crazy. Today's one I haven't done yet. but anybody here, tell us what you do to increase your brain ability, a bit like your exercise. And we've got some here that's come in, Muir, here. So, oh, goodness, so many come in. I'm going to have to put them up. I'm going to go backwards. Yes to Wordle, says Josie Morgan. Yes, says somebody else. Yes to that. We have some. Oh, goodness, everything's disappeared now. So we will get back to that in a minute because my laptop has gone crazy. We talked about the brain ability. We talked about the exercise. Talk about how all that fits into what Goldster is doing.
Well, we see the need for a completely new way of thinking about health. And it's partly a result of COVID and partly a result of what's in the newspapers at the moment about the NHS. And I've worked for the NHS for 50 years, and it's a wonderful organization. But it's becoming clear now the NHS is good at diagnosis. Have you got cancer or not? It's good at acute disease, when I had a heart attack, for example, and it's good at the early stage of treatment, chemotherapy, for example, or getting the right dose of rheumatoid arthritis drugs for you. But after that, you're on your own.
Right.
I've got heart disease and, other problems, but the heart disease, I may see the NHS for an hour a year. So 99.98% of waking hours, you're on your own.
You told me a fascinating story when we were prepping for this, that when you had your heart condition, you went away with a sack full of medication, but nothing about well-being.
Yeah, it's interesting. You see there, the first 3 months, they're very good to heart disease in Oxford. When I woke up the first morning, it was a trainer beside the bed, not a doctor. And she said, I've come to book you in for the training program. Interestingly, a woman down the road wasn't admitted to cardiac. She had a heart attack about the same time as I did. And she was admitted to a general medical ward, not the cardiology ward. And all she was told was, you better take it easy. So I've dealt with that. But for the first 3 months, I went to gym every second week. Okay. Very good. That was 11 years ago. Since then, I've had about 1,000 leaflets. I've had about 1,000 boxes of drugs. And the drugs are very important. I take them. I have had not one word about diet or exercise from the NHS. So in Goldster, we're going to develop a new health service called the GHS. I think I'll use the same font.
GHS, yes.
Goldster Health Service.
Okay.
And there's going to be four services. Firstly, the insight service, education. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is the elixir of life. You have to learn about what's happening to you. Yep. And then there are two other services. One is rejuvenation. So how do you recapture lost ability? Mm-hmm. Your fitness, in a sense, but I like the word rejuvenation. How do you get as fit as you were 10 years before? Because it's very easy to do. Secondly, risk reduction. So what about the decades ahead? Mm-hmm. And then the fourth service is we started calling adaptation. What happens when something happens? Diagnosis of rheumatoid, diagnosis of Parkinson's, whatever. But I think we should call it the fight back service. Fight back service. Yeah. Well, F it, you know, yes. I've got this. I'm going to go on with it. Now, there, as I say, the NHS will be very good at getting the diagnosis, the acute phase, and the early stage of treatment.
That's good. Yeah. That's all there. That's in place because you've worked with the NHS for years.
Once you've had your hip replacement or you've had your chemotherapy, the years stretch out, and I say 99.96%, you're on your own. So we're going to deliver, involve people in continuing to monitor their own health. Healthcare, self-care is the most important form of healthcare. The second most important form of healthcare, we're calling buddy care. Right. Other people with the same condition, because they know a hell of a lot about the condition. You see, my younger daughter's got type 1 diabetes, and she's part of a group of about 30-odd young people, or not so young people, doing high-intensity exercise. Mm-hmm. But that group, they know more about the insulin pen than the clinicians do. Mm-hmm. And they're there 24/7. Are we having trouble with a glucose meter? Well, someone will be there, they'll help you out.
But I find this fascinating, because if you go to see a doctor now and I say I feel a bit blue or I've got a bad knee or something, he or she is going to give me a prescription, probably, or I've got a rash or something. Now, that rash could be from stress, couldn't it?
Yes.
So it doesn't actually need a prescriptive drug. It needs me to learn how to stop being stressed. Am I along the right track here?
You're very astute, Humphrey, and that what we're doing, we're going to introduce a national activity therapy service.
Okay.
That every drug prescription will be accompanied by an activity prescription.
Right.
And that will be partly online, Diabetes UK website, or there's a company called Exit that's very good online exercise. But also, my GP record was my postcode. So it knows, are there any Ramblers well-being walks locally, or is there a gym with a trainer who's got a special interest in heart disease?
Yes.
This is a postcode. Yeah. And we're not expecting the GP even to press the button. Humphrey's got type 2 diabetes. Mm. He lives here. He's this age. We know his body mass index. Yeah. The record does.
Yeah.
So we can deliver something. And that could be very personal.
And this is, you talk about the goals to health service. It's separate from the NHS, isn't it? You're not at the moment.
Complementing, supplementing, and supporting the NHS.
Everybody of our beautiful audience out there, any thoughts on the goals to health service? What else it should include? We're in informative days, aren't we? So we can mold it into whatever's in it. I'm just going to talk, because we've got lots of stuff in about what we were talking about before. Gloria says, I do a yoga daily workout class every day, Qigong weekly, walking 4 times a week, and listen to lots of talks and lectures. I'm aiming at being encouraged by goals to do more and also more socializing. That sounds
And more for others, because I think goals are, we may well adopt the World Wildlife Trust or the Woodland Trust or something.
Yeah.
It's automatically, our activities are leading to sponsorship to benefit others.
To benefit. And Gloria is 73 years old. So
young.
So,
yep.
Very young. Yes. Very young. She's in the sod 70. You're sod 70, Gloria. Jean Joyce, I walk most days between 30 minutes and an hour, but painful hips stop me doing more. I am 76. That's Jean Joyce. And let's see.
Yeah, you see, you can't deny there's a thing called arthritis of the hip.
Yes.
And again, for people with arthritis of the hip.
Yes.
The future of swimming pools is very worrying.
Yes.
With energy costs and the problems there. But swimming is wonderful. Even with arthritis of the hip, then yoga can make a huge contribution.
Yes, we have got a lot of these. If I could just swim twice a week, walk about 3 miles, but only once a week, Pilates and yoga on Goldster. We're getting the Goldster Health Services up and running. Judy, I have completed the Preventing Dementia course with Goldster and the University of Tasmania, and it was brilliant.
Yeah.
You were involved in that, I presume.
No, I think Tasmania we've got a partnership with them.
Okay.
It's linked to us. They're a key partner.
And Judy has signed on. I've also signed on to the Understanding Dementia course, which is free and interesting. I woke up this morning, and the first thing that popped into my head were the names of the lobes of the brain.
Gosh.
What are the lobes of the brain? Do you know them?
Left and right, I think, is about all I know. But she'll know more than me now.
Anybody know the lobes of the brain? Everybody plays Wordle, and nobody knows the lobes of the brain. Ruth, I do a variety of walking with a group and two per week. I don't have a car, so I have to walk a lot of ballet classes.
Yeah.
Goodness, this is fascinating. And this is exactly what we're talking about, isn't it, Bjorn?
Dance is very good. Yes. And in fact, now, Parkinson's disease is one of the few diseases where the medics have recognized the need for activity, and dance is very good.
Because that's social, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you see, I banned the word. Another word I banned is physical activity. Because I said to these ex that there's 40,000 trainers out there who we've sort of let drift into the fitness industry, which is very good, but it's mostly young people in Lycra. So I'm trying to bring them back into the health service.
Yes.
And I said, you're underselling yourself. Your activity is physical, cognitive, and emotional.
Yes. And what we're doing now is cognitive, is it? The inside story is getting people to sort of interact with us.
And I hope emotional. I hope we're stimulating or irritating people.
Well, let's see. There's somebody did say you were. No, it says Sir Muir is an inspirational. Can't wait for GHS. That comes from Judy.
Good.
So it's coming in.
But see, Judy, we'd like to know what contribution you could make to GHS. And essentially, my daughter with her type 1 diabetes group, I said, what do you call yourselves? Are you peers? No, we're comrades. Comrades.
Oh, comrades.
Comrades with the same disease. So, and it's very interesting when you look at these groups, that part of it's about how do you cope with the disease.
Yes.
The other part's how do you cope with the NHS?
Well, that is one today, isn't it? That it's a big worry for a lot of people because they cannot get GP appointments. They cannot go to A&E. And I think the waiting lists are a year or so.
But I would say everyone you've quoted there has got some contribution to make to others.
Well, the question, Judy, is what can you do for others? Put it in the chat. And and anybody that wants to tell us what you can do, as well as the exercise you do for others, put it in the chat and we'll discuss it.
I found this form of yoga very helpful. And
yeah,
I do things.
Sue says, can Golster do anything like CBT for autistic people who need carers and find it hard to get out even though physically able, e.g. my son can't get out till after lunch as his rituals take all morning. You could link to MenCap or the National Autistic Society.
Yes. The member goals are mostly for sort of 55 up, but one of the things we're looking at is the use of virtual reality. And I know there are many people not yet online, and we have to address that, but it's very clear for problems like autism that virtual reality is very stimulating. And what we will see in the next couple of years are these big goggles will go. It'll finish up looking a bit like spectacles. So having some form of helping someone get out of their particular environment and interact with others.
Okay, that's yes. And Judy says, I could support others with the same problems as me, which is the buddy care.
Judy, you're signed up. Thank you very much.
Judy, you just
signed. We know where you live.
We are going to come for you. And Josie Morgan, I am with U3A and I'm doing a Thames Path, also Capital Ring. Is this a walking group? Is it joined beginning at lockdown and we walked throughout, learning Greek and belong to a writing group for the last 7 years set up by the Royal Literary Society.
Terrific, but I've got the U3A in my sights too. And there's a wonderful new movement in the U3A called Future Lives.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, what I've been saying to you is bloody simple, isn't it, really? But we need to get out to every bridge club, every bowls club, every mosque, every church, every WI group. And I can't do it. We can do it online, but I'd like U3A to train about 1,000 volunteers to go out and give this talk.
You are inspirational. I've got to say, I'm sitting here, I'm being inspired.
Exploitational,
is that the word? It's not one of your misspelled words.
But the U3A, I'm very keen in the U3A. We're in discussion with the Future Lives group, not just to learn, but to get out there and help others learn.
So Golster, which is barely 2 years old, started during the lockdown, yes, to bring the connectivity and the the inspirational,
yes,
learning into people's homes. And you've been with it from the start. How has it evolved?
Well, I think what we're seeing now is the world is evolving in this way. I say they've talked about the third healthcare revolution driven by citizens' knowledge and the internet. I'm now saying that we should say goals as the fourth healthcare revolution. And that's a bit, the fourth education revolution is taking place. This is Sir Humphrey Seldon wrote this. And the fourth education revolution is that people learn more from one another than they do from the teacher.
Yes.
So these young people sitting in a lecture theater with their laptops open, smiling at the lecturer, and are in fact typing, what is this idiot talking about? They're learning from one another.
Yeah.
And the fourth healthcare revolution is not just us giving knowledge to individuals, mm-hmm, it's the buddy care and the groups.
Right.
And that is let's use the word digital, but I don't like the word digital very much, because we don't talk about electricity healthcare. So digital is everywhere. But I think, and we don't talk about AI as artificial intelligence, it's augmented intelligence.
Okay. Augmented, additional.
Yeah, addition to the human being.
Yeah. Yes. Just run through those four revolutions that you were talking
about. The first was the public health revolution.
When was that?
In the 19th century. It gave us clean, clear water. And I'm pointing at the River Thames, mm-hmm, over there.
Oh, which where we are, yeah, at the moment. Yeah.
And that was the 19th century. It's mostly government, mm-hmm, to take action. The second has been the last 50 years of what I call the high-tech revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Chemotherapy, MRI, stents.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Been fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. The third healthcare revolution is shifting the balance of power. And it's a bit like Airbnb, where it's citizens' knowledge and the internet. But that still implies it's the citizen on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And
so the augmented part, in a way.
It's just astonishing. And I remember 50 years ago, when I started work with older people, there were many people didn't have a telephone. Oh, no, they won't use a telephone. Older people won't use a telephone. So it's coming very quickly. And
I remember people telling me, oh, I'm not going to use email, but I'm quite happy with the fax.
Yes, yes.
And when the fax came, I'm quite happy with carbon paper.
Yeah, yeah. So this is happening. And I sometimes talk about mains knowledge, like mains electricity. We do think how we give everyone knowledge. And yeah, I'm working with a wonderful guy called Michael Blackman, who was in the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife had very bad dementia. And about 20% of care homes don't have the internet.
What?
Yeah. They've got it in the office and they've got a big television set, but nobody really knows how to work it. So we can't put on concerts or discussion groups. Or the internet should be in every room.
Goodness.
So if you're in a home, I don't like the care home, the care word, but if you love bagpipe music, then the lounge doesn't want bagpipe music. So you should be able to see it in your room and discuss with 24 other people, yeah, talking about the country.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of the direct service we can give people, mm-hmm, but then the ability to discuss things, yeah, with others.
Yes, I think. And then the fourth one is Goldster.
Yes.
What we, you and I, are discussing, yeah, now.
This is the revolution.
This is a revolution. And just to sort of encapsulate that, that is the non-medical part of keeping fit and as you can, as you get older.
Yeah, it's complementary and supplementary,
yeah,
to the health service. It's understanding what's happening, reversing what's happened to you in the last 10 years or since diagnosis, reducing the risk of things happening, and then if you have got a condition coming along, fighting back.
The fight back. Yeah. Yes, fine. Now, almost for 45 minutes, you've been listening and hearing Professor Sir Muir Grey. Imagine what his favorite song might have been back in the 60s, the one that tugged his heart, and tell us what yours is. We have a lot of stuff coming in and a few questions for you, Muir. Sorry, do you take medication or supplements? Yes, you do. And do you get any side effects if you take them? Yes.
Oh, I'm on 6 pills in the morning and 2 pills at night for heart disease.
Yeah.
And I don't think I get side effects, but I haven't read the leaflets, because I think if you read the leaflets too much, you start to develop side effects.
Well, so leaflets, you always have, you know, all these dreadful... Sure. And if you don't take any of them, what happens to you?
Nothing immediately, but my risk of a recurrent heart attack would increase significantly.
And tell us what happened with your heart attack when you had it.
Just came out of the blue, terrific chest pain. I thought I was having indigestion, and then the penny dropped that there was something a bit more going on.
And what do you call night? Did you call?
No, my wife drove me up to the hospital.
Goodness, yeah. And you were how old then?
Well, I was 67, I think.
67. And you had a
stent put in.
You had a stent put in then. Yes. Okay. But you were a non-smoker. You weren't obese. You don't look as if you've been obese. No. And you had a full active life, and it just like that. Yeah. It's so Mira's inspirational again. We have. And which I agree with, actually. I don't often agree with my guests that much, but I do today. From Facebook, Gloria, EFT tapping with Kath Temple. Oh, Kath Temple's one of ours. Can Golster do anything? Oh, we've had that one. I'm sorry if I'm repeating or if I miss any, because my computer's going. Judy says, I agree with Samir's dislike of the term carer. I look after my dad, 95, and I try to aid without taking over and to encourage him to do more, because I think that's the best intentions.
Good, well done.
Yeah, that's
you're an enabler. You're an enabler.
An enabler and not a carer. Yes. And what's the buddy term? Is that buddy care?
We're just calling it buddy care at the moment.
Yeah, it needs to be something else, doesn't it? Really?
Yes, it's all suggestions welcome. I say my younger daughters, they're comrades. We're all in it together, and we help one another.
Yeah. A bud enabler.
Well, enablers, I partly use that to try and do away with the word care, but yes, they're definitely enablers. We're enabling you to adapt to this diagnosis that's come out of the blue, that you've got Parkinson's, or you've had a stroke, or you've had a TIA. God almighty, well, you know, what am I going to do?
Tricia, I volunteer at the local library with early years children singing nursery rhymes and telling stories.
Yep.
That's a good one, isn't it? Jean Joyce, it's important to meet friends and be interested in everything. I couldn't agree with you more. Jean, the more curious you are, the happier I am. Try to learn new skills as well as keeping fit.
Yes.
Yeah, curiosity is important, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. And again, this is partly, of course, if you're housebound, the things get more difficult. So we're not going to have everyone living in groups.
Yeah.
So we need to think a lot more. And I am disappointed a bit how we're working with library services. So when people stop coming to the library, what are we going to do about it? Or if people stop coming to the U3A, let's reach out to them and engage them.
I've got so many here. I apologize. I can't take all these here because what I want you to do, we've got a few minutes left.
Yes.
I want you to sum up as if you're giving an elevator pitch to what you think healthy aging without medication, what Golster is doing. Just tell the world.
Well, a population change is taking place. The number of people aged over 80 will double. And that's presented as this tidal wave of need coming down upon us. But we now know, we have a scientific understanding of what is happening.
Yeah.
And there are four processes: the normal biological process of aging, which does not cause major problems until the late 90s. Look at Her Majesty, for example, need a bit of luck, but it's not a cause of major problems. Secondly, loss of fitness. And fitness is not just about young people in leotards. Is the fact that from the age of about 22, we spend far too much time sitting down, the car, the computer, the desk job. I mean, homeworking. You don't even have commuting to help you. It's straight from the bed to the kitchen.
Or the social interaction that you buy a newspaper.
It's a loss of fitness, and that's physical and mental fitness. Thirdly, disease. And although some diseases may be linked to aging, like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, most diseases are caused by the modern environment. I don't like the word lifestyle either. It blames people.
Mm-hmm.
It's the environment in which we live. The car, the computer, the desk job, and calories everywhere you look. That's the modern environment. But all of these linked in is the social change and social pressures. sometimes practical pressures like deprivation, other times the negative thinking of other people. Now, what we're going to do in the GHS, Goals for Health Service, and I say I'm hoping the fonts will be like the fonts of the NHS. Maybe the NHS will sue us, but I hope they'll see.
Oh, that'll be all publicity is good publicity. Yes,
but we're there to complement, supplement, and support the NHS, because the NHS will never have enough staff to go out and see everyone who needs it. They'll never have enough practice nurses to give information. So we've got four services in the GHS: education and insight, rejuvenation, recover lost ability, risk reduction, reduce your risk of something nasty like dementia happening, and fight back if something nasty does happen.
Goalstra is going to evolve into.
That's the revolution.
That's the revolution. We've got some more up here. And, Sue, we took up beekeeping.
Great, yeah.
Beekeeping and love helping mentoring the younger members. Yeah. That is a good one.
Bees are a very good example. Bees and ants are my model of how we should run the health service.
Yeah. Is Goalstra thinking of using a separate channel for social contact? As not all of us like or want to be part of Facebook. We could do a dating service.
There's stuff out there, and the clever young people can do anything. So Facebook, YouTube, but yes, everything will be involved. Facebook, YouTube, TikTok.
And Kim underneath that says Facebook is fine if you only use its goodness. I sing and have begun Tai Chi. Well done, Kim. And sorry, it's feeling guilty having sat down a lot recently addicted to watching the World Cup.
Yes, sir.
So Muir is the perfect granddad. Glasgow is a tough city, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you have a rough and tumble childhood?
Well, it's interesting, really. When I came to Oxford 50 years ago, they said to me, what about the violence of Glasgow? Mm. I said, it's nothing to the polite violence of Southern England. No one in Glasgow says with the greatest respect when they're putting the knife in. with the very greatest respect, yes. Humphrey. But it's very interesting you should say that, Humphrey. So different types of violence.
In Glasgow, I just did a literary festival up there, and the Glasgow Kiss was explained.
Oh, the Glasgow Kiss, yes.
What is the Glasgow Kiss? I was going to say, it's the headbutt, isn't it?
But one of the great things about Glasgow is that, and of course, Billy Connolly epitomizes this, really. I mean, there are dozens of Billy Connollys in Glasgow. We think with our mouth open. It's just talking. So I've been talking a lot for 50 years. Yeah. And but by talking a lot, people criticize it and your ideas get better. Yeah. So it's a very stimulating place, Glasgow. Yeah. But I've been in colonial administration 50 years, Southern England. some of my fellow Scots call it missionary work.
We're not going to go on that topic at the moment, but just stick with us for a moment, because I want to tell everybody here and what our wonderful audience out there what is coming up on Goalstra Inside Story. Tomorrow we have Lucinda, my co-host, with Jeremy Seal. And she is talking about Nicholas, the epic journey from saint to Santa Claus. Goodness. Mm-hmm. So Nicholas is one of our most influential saints. And then I am on December 29th with the ebullient and avuncular chair of the Crime Writers Association. We have one of his books here. Maxine Jakubowski, who works include The Return of Sherlock Holmes and also, wait for it, The Mammoth Book of Erotica. And I never thought I would say Sherlock Holmes and erotica in the same sentence. So tune in then on December the 29th. And then we have our book of the month, which we have here, which is Breakfast at Tiffany's by Truman Capote. And we chose it because we have a chat with our members, our Goalstra members, we all get together. And one of them said, how do you get a 16-year-old to read a book? And we tossed the ideas around. And I think somebody said, well, get a book that's become a very famous film. This has got Audrey Hepburn and George Peppard in it. Make sure it's a thin book so that they can read it. And then set up a conversation to compare the book and the film. And that is what we are going to do on the day before New Year's Eve with Breakfast at Tiffany's. And then we go into the new year without spilling my water. We go into theatre land with Michael Kovanis, theatre critic, columnist, biographer, of the great Andrew Lloyd Webber and Maggie Smith and the likes. And his latest book is Master of the House, which is the theatres of Cameron Mackintosh, who's Les Miserables and other ones. And because that is such a beautiful book, and because it is actually quite pricey, we're going to run some sort of crazy competition on January the 5th and then give it away to the winner. No idea what the competition is like. No idea what we're going to ask about you. Musicals, you're there.
Yes.
Yeah, they are inspirational, aren't they?
Yes, I was brought up in the world of Oklahoma and South Pacific.
South Pacific? Mm. What's your favourite musical?
I think South Pacific.
South Pacific. Bally High.
Yes.
Can you sing a bit of...
Okay, I wouldn't damage people by singing it. But...
101 Honey Bun.
Yes.
Yes. And is that Some Enchanted Evening too, yes, in South Pacific, isn't it? Anybody knows, give us your favourite musical since my chat's not working. I'll pick it up if I can. And we have the song that we've had people coming in with Harry Nilsson, with the Ugly Brothers, with the Beatles yesterday, and others that I don't even want to start looking at them because the computer will go crazy. But the guess, nobody got the guess of what your favourite song was from when you were a young man, so tell us what it is.
Well, I've got a lot of them, and several have been mentioned by others. But the one we're thinking a lot about at the moment, because we're starting a big rejuvenation campaign called Spring Back to Health on the 2nd of April, not the 1st of April, the 2nd of April. And walking is going to be a key theme, because walking is greatly underestimated. And there's a fantastic song called Walking Back to Happiness by... Susan Shapiro. She was a young Jewish woman, and she's still singing. But Walking Back to Happiness, Say Goodbye to Loneliness. That would be my number one.
Walking Back to Happiness, Jean Shapiro, and we've been told that we can't play it because that would happen. What are your other favourite ones from that era that?
Well, I'm the sort of, it's very interesting, we're doing the work with this people, with people in care homes, and how we can give them music. And most people, it's about the age of 15 to 24, and then after that, I mean, I don't know anything after the Beatles, really. So
it's interesting, 15 to 24, what happens? That's when...
Things are imprinted in your mind. Now, the music I've loved most since 24 has been classical music, which I was never exposed to as a young person. But in terms of what you might call popular music, it's really after the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, that's about it for me. But I go back, I saw Bill Haley and the Comets in Glasgow.
Bill Haley and the Comets, goodness.
Yes, I was about 11 or something.
Yes.
We just went, I was 11 year old, and I went with a friend. You can never imagine doing that nowadays.
There was a magnificent summer's evening this year when on the same evening, Paul McCartney was headlining Glastonbury.
Yes.
And Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and the Rolling Stones were playing at Hyde Park.
Yes.
And both of them were packed. Yes. And I thought of you, actually, Muir. I thought, that's Muir's era. Yeah. That's my era a bit. But although I'm a little younger than you. We have got, oh, my goodness, we've got a few in here. Love that song, says Patricia. Helen Shapiro, great singer. Yeah, you've got a lot of people agreeing with you. She went to my school, says Trisha Walker. Jamaica Farewell. And then Stephanie says, we're developing... and improving all aspects of how our community interacts. Engaging, sharing is paramount, as Sir Muir wisely says, and a big smile. Thank you for your wonderful comments to everyone and to you particularly. Time's Winged Chariot is upon us. The great maestro of healthy aging, Professor Sir Muir Gray, thank you. Thank you for all your fearless contributions with songs and health things and questions. And I've got to say thank you to Goldsters Ben Summers and Lee Pycroft, who helped set this thing up, our first ever Inside Story, live from the Riverstone Theatre, right on the banks of the River Thames. Until tomorrow, in cyberspace, that will be Lucinda and St. Nicholas. Stay involved, stay curious, stay generous, stay safe, stay connected, and of course, stay Goldster. Thank you, Muir, for being such an illuminating guest from Riverstone Theatre in London.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everybody, and a round of applause.
Thank you for listening, and find out our vast range on www.golster.co.uk. Our vision is to help people stay stimulated, active, socializing, and empowered in what we say live happier and healthier for longer. The podcast is one of many strands, which includes nutrition, yoga, art, singing, languages, brain power, love, and many, many others, more than 300, all from the comfort of your home. If you like what you hear, please press that big subscribe button and tell your friends, family, colleagues, community, and yes, your enemies too, about what Golster does. Spread the word about our incredible range of guests and subject, and until next time, goodbye from all of us at Golster.